afternoon, and welcome to the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. With it till 3 on this Monday, with plenty to get to over the next couple of hours. Coming up, the NBA playoff field is set. Which teams are facing the most pressure this NBA postseason? Plus, is Travis Etienne actually an NFL wide receiver? Get to that later on. Is load management on the way to the NFL? The big concern for the Big 12. Also, when will each rookie quarterback make his debut? Empty gestures, my night with the Charleston Battery over the weekend, and a whole lot more over the next couple of hours. Kevin Kelly will join us 30 minutes from now, new head coach of Presbyterian and somebody that I've called before, one of the most interesting, maybe the most interesting man in all of football. He refuses to punt. He always kicks onside kicks. We'll get to that later on. We had the Hall of Fame over the weekend for the NBA with Kobe Bryant, the late Kobe Bryant's wife, helping to induct Kobe over the weekend. We'll get to some sound from that and a lot to do from now till 3. You can join the conversation throughout the afternoon, 843-721-9500 to give us a call. You can always text the show, 843-608-1734. You can get to us on Twitter, at Morrow Middays, on Facebook, at ESPN Charleston, or online at charlestonsportsradio.com. There you can leave a message for the show. You can find the latest versions of the show podcasted, or you could take the Morrow Midday Show with you wherever you go by simply streaming us online at charlestonsportsradio.com. With you till 3 on this Friday afternoon. Or Friday, what am I talking about? It's Monday. It's the start of a new week. Be nice if it was a Friday. We got a long week ahead. We'll be out the for the PGA Championship starting on Wednesday. We'll be out there from Wednesday to Sunday. We got Citadel Baseball a couple of times mixed in there this week. We got a lot going on. And happy to kickstart the week with you till 3. Blake's on the board today. Blake, what's going on? How are you?
How you doing, Luke?
Doing well. Welcome aboard.
Happy Friday.
Yeah, if only.
I was like, God, this week would be my
best. Yeah, wouldn't that be something? Get right back into that weekend. Let me start with this. It is a Monday. Let's start the week. The NBA playoffs begin tomorrow night with a play-in round, which I look forward to. I think the NBA nailed it. I think it's a good idea. I'm looking forward to the games. We have some fun matchups. The Charlotte Hornets are in the playoffs and are in the play-in round. They have to play for their playoff life tomorrow. But which teams are facing the most pressure as we head into the NBA postseason? When you look at the second half of these conferences amongst the playoff fields, you have a bunch of teams that are playing with house money. Right, the New York Knicks getting in as the 4 seed. It's the first time they'll be hosting a playoff series in like 20 years. They could lose in the first round. It's still a good year for the Knicks. The fact that the Atlanta Hawks, after making a midseason coaching change, are in the postseason. They've already won this season. They don't need to do any more in the playoffs. The Celtics and Miami Heat are somewhat of disappointments in the East when you look at the way that last season went or the expectations. The Heat won the East a year ago. The Celtics should have been one of the best teams in the East. And in the West, on the flip side, you have the Golden State Warriors who are in the play-in round. You shouldn't expect too much for them. Same with John Morant and the Grizzlies. Even the Mavericks and the Trailblazers are in the second or maybe third tier of teams in the West. But when you look at true title contenders, teams that actually could win the championship, who faces the most pressure? I have 7 teams here. Let's order them. The top 7 teams, because we love lists around here, the 7 teams with the most pressure in the NBA. And number 7 is the Phoenix Suns. I was going to throw them, or I wasn't even going to keep them, include them on this list. I was going to give you a 6-pack. But I figured, you know what? Phoenix, they are 1 game away from having the best record in the league. So I have to at least mention them. I have to at least include them, bring them up. But they face zero pressure. They were under 500 a year ago. In fact, heading into the bubble, Phoenix was 13 games under 500. This year is their first winning season since 2013. It's the first time they're in the playoffs since 2010. I think, even though they're a 2 seed, even though they were 1 game away from having the best record in the league, I think there is zero pressure on the Phoenix Suns, especially when you consider that they will probably match up with the LA Lakers, the defending champs, and LeBron James, the best player in the league. They'll have to deal with him in the second round. So even though they're the number 2 seed, it's a bit of a tough draw, because you have to deal with the Lakers and LeBron, and then you go on to Denver in the next round. And for Phoenix, as great of a year as they had, I still don't take them all that seriously as a title contender. They've done a good job with a new coach. They brought Chris Paul in there. That has changed things. They have good guard play. But Phoenix, if they lose in the first round to the Lakers, I don't think that would be much of a disappointment. I still think that would be an impressive year for the Suns. I don't know how many people forecasted this from them this year. They're number 7 on the list of teams with most pressure. Number 6 would be those Lakers, and I hesitate to put them higher. Many still believe they're the favorites to win the West, but we have never had a 7 seed win a championship. Now, Jared Dudley of the LA Lakers had a comical quote yesterday where he said something along the lines of, if the Lakers pull this off, it's going to be, you know, the greatest run. No team has ever done what the Lakers are trying to do. And we were talking about this a lot last time. Let's see. Let me get the exact quote from Jared Dudley. He said, quote, it will be the hardest challenge any team has ever had in NBA history. Let's cool it, Jared Dudley. Weren't we saying the same thing last year in the bubble about these teams, about the Lakers on their way to the NBA championship, about how that was going to be the hardest challenge playing during a pandemic with no fans in the middle of Orlando? Now we're saying it because the Lakers are in the play-in round. We'll say it again next year when the Lakers have to somehow go on the road in the first round. Whatever the latest story is for the LA Lakers always seems to be the hardest. This year, they're a 7 seed. They have to play in the play-in round, much to the chagrin of LeBron James. But this is not the most challenging thing an NBA potential champion has ever tried to accomplish. And for the Lakers, the reason why I only put them 6 on the list is because exactly that. They are a 7 seed, even with the talent on that roster. And no 7 seed has ever won. I don't expect the Lakers to win the NBA Finals this year. But where there is a little bit of pressure for the Lakers, because they are defending champs, and when you win the championship a year ago, sure, it'd be great for them to repeat. Maybe we expect LeBron to be in the championship every year because that's what we've grown accustomed to. But those would be unfair expectations the year after a championship to expect that the Lakers should be the winners once again. But where there is some pressure on the Lakers is the fact that their championship last year came in the most unusual season, right? In a bubble with no fans, no travel. You had time off in the middle of a season for somebody like LeBron to get rested for the postseason. It was a quirky year where you got to face the Heat in the finals instead of some of the better teams in the East. And that's not to put an asterisk next to that championship. But if the Lakers, say, get bounced in the first round this year, they wind up a 7 seed even though they've had some injuries this year, and they get bounced in the first round, you start looking at last year's championship with all those other factors, not having to travel, not having to deal with road crowds, and you wonder, you know, was that simply just a bubble championship? Was that just a Disney trophy, or was that on the same level of a normal champion in the NBA? And that's where I think the pressure lies for the Lakers. Not that they need to defend their crown, not that they need to repeat, but simply they need to show that last year was not some sort of fluke. Because if they lose early in the playoffs, I imagine that will be a conversation. Number 5 on the teams in terms of pressure, number 5 would be the Sixers have the most pressure. Yeah, sure, they're the 1 seed in the East, but I think with the presence of the Brooklyn Nets in the Eastern Conference, that takes the load off of all of the other teams. The Nets are the ones carrying the pressure for that conference, not the Sixers. Even though they are the 1 seed, even though they had a better record than Brooklyn, I think they could challenge Brooklyn, but on paper, I do think the Nets are the better team. I expect the Nets in a series to beat the Sixers. So I don't put the Sixers as much pressure on Philadelphia. Where I will give them pressure, other than being the number 1 seed, is the fact that Doc Rivers is now their head coach. And Doc Rivers needs to make up for the bad taste in all of our mouths after last year when he blew his third 3-1 lead. That was with the Clippers. He now comes to the Sixers. He helps them become the best team record-wise in the East. I think the pressure is more so on Doc Rivers. He's coaching more stars. Let's see what he can do in the playoffs. Because even though he's won a championship, he is typically underwhelmed in the postseason. How can he do now in the Eastern Conference? Additionally, the Sixers do need to show me something. It's been 3 straight years where they've made it to the playoffs with Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid and haven't won much. Right? They lost in the first round a year ago. They got to show me a little bit more in the playoffs. And now they are the 1 seed. This seems like the perfect opportunity. New head coach. But just because of Brooklyn, I think there's less pressure on Philadelphia this year than the last couple. Which takes me to the number 4 team, the Milwaukee Bucks, who I put in the same group. The Bucks normally would have a bunch of pressure on them in the East because Giannis hasn't been able to come through. They lost in the Eastern Conference semifinals last year, the Eastern Conference finals the year before. They haven't won enough in the postseason with their star, Giannis. I don't think the supporting cast around him is good enough in the postseason. Mike Budenholzer has always underperformed in the postseason. And the Bucks are back up there again this year as a 3 seed. They've been one of the top teams in the East now for 5 years. But I don't think there's as much pressure on them because simply, again, the Brooklyn Nets. That's where all the attention goes in the East. And we'll talk about this a little bit later on with the Big 12 and college football, but it's a similar dynamic with the Sixers and the Bucks. that we pay so much attention to the Brooklyn Nets, the Bucks and the Sixers can disappoint us, and we won't even notice it. I think there's less pressure on them. Number three of the teams with most pressure in the NBA postseason would be the Utah Jazz. And I was hesitant to put them this high because I don't believe in the Utah Jazz. But I figure if you have the best record in the league, there is some pressure on you to show that it's for real, that you aren't just some regular season champion, that you are legitimate. Now, they have lost in the first round of the playoffs each of the last 2 years, despite winning at least 44 games now in three straight seasons. They have to do something in the postseason, and now they're the number one seed in all of the NBA. We talked about it on the show about a week ago that usually that does not lead to NBA championships. In fact, it's only happened five times in the last 18 years, and I don't think it's going to happen this year. For me, the Jazz this year has already been a win. It's been a victory to be the number one team in the league record-wise when I don't know how many people anticipated that. With that does come some expectations, some pressure. That's why I slapped them three, but I really don't look at the Jazz as a serious title contender. Number two of the teams at most pressure would be the LA Clippers. I think the Clippers have the most pressure on them in the West. Last year, we thought the championship was the Clippers, and they fell apart in the postseason, leading to the ouster of Doc Rivers. They need to do better this year. They also seem to almost tank the last two games. They lost their last two games of the season, putting them in the four seed. If they won those two games, or I think even just one of those two games, they would be a three seed, which would match them potentially with the Lakers in the second round. And it almost seemed like that's what the Clippers were avoiding, that they wanted a four seed so that they would rather face the Jazz than the Lakers if it came to that in the next round. Because with a week until the playoffs start, they decided to sit their stars over the weekend the last two games, and I don't think that was necessary. And they played a bunch of nobodies in the second half yesterday to lose that game. I think the Clippers want to avoid the Lakers. And the Clippers, with a new head coach and all that star power, maybe we were just a year early on them. Maybe they needed a year under their belt. And the Clippers have been playing really good basketball, and on paper they're one of the best teams in the league, but they still continue to struggle this year in fourth quarters and in close games. I think the Clippers go into this playoff with the most pressure in the West. Because if you ask me, the best teams on paper in the West, I think it's the Clippers and the Lakers. But I just laid out the reasons earlier why the Lakers don't have as much pressure on them. They just won their championship. They did their thing last year. They did what the Clippers were supposed to do. And so now this year is the chance for the Clippers. Doc Rivers was the scapegoat last year. He's gone now. They don't have that scapegoat. Sure, they could blame Tyronn Lue, but it's on Kawhi Leonard, it's on Paul George to actually play well in the postseason. I think the Clippers have the most pressure on them in the West. But they obviously don't have the most pressure on them for this playoff field. That belongs to the Brooklyn Nets, obviously. The Nets are the number one team when it comes to pressure in the playoffs. And it's obvious why. When you go out and you get a James Harden and you put this trio together, even if they haven't played together much this regular season, it's the most talented team on paper. It is the three best stars I think we've ever seen on one NBA team. You have three MVP caliber talents there running the show. And even with a first-time head coach in Steve Nash, and even though they're not the number one seed, the Brooklyn Nets should win the NBA Finals. And if they don't, it will be a disappointment. If James Harden doesn't play well in the postseason, it'll be another knock on his resume. It'll be another knock to his legacy. The Brooklyn Nets are clearly the team that faces the most pressure. They need to be the ones holding up the trophy at the end of the year. Otherwise, it will be a disappointment. More so for them than anybody else. And with the NBA postseason beginning tomorrow, those are the teams with the most pressure on them this playoff. Coming up, is Travis Etienne actually an NFL wide receiver? That seems to be the plan in Jacksonville. We'll get to that when we come back. It's the Morrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
You're listening to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Coming up, is Travis Etienne actually an NFL wide receiver? We'll get to that here on the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. Blake's on the ones and twos today. You know, I know for Fan Talk with Bobby, Mondays is normally what, Motown, right? Motown Monday?
Motown Mondays, yeah, with Bobby.
What else do you have? What's Tuesday? Do you have one
Tuesday,
for each day?
Tuesday is Country Tune Tuesday.
Okay.
Wednesday is One Hit Wonders.
All right, I like that.
Thursday is Thirsty Thursday, so songs about drinking.
Yeah, perfect.
And then Feel Good Friday, which is just right. Whatever.
I like
Feel
it.
Feel Good songs are out there.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right.
You want some themes?
I'll take whatever you got. Fine with me. I do love Motown, so you know Motown Monday. That's not too bad either.
But see, you know some of the music I know growing up and stuff.
Yeah, so I'm sure a little more than Bobby. I'm sure.
A lot more than Bobby. He just walked by, so I know he's not listening to your show in his office, so we can talk about it real quick.
Oh, perfect. Perfect. Unload on everything that you have from the past few months. Reports out of Jacksonville are that Travis Etienne is working out as a wide receiver. That was the case Saturday at their rookie minicamp. Urban Meyer said this is going to be a thing. They're going to work Etienne out this offseason as a wide receiver. And apparently this was the plan all along, because here is Travis Etienne over the weekend. After the rookie minicamp on Saturday, he was asked about this in a press conference. Here is what Etienne said.
Hey, Travis. Coach just let us know about the plans for you to just really work out as a wide receiver here this weekend. Just curious, at what point did they inform you of that, and how did it feel? What were your emotions?
Coach informed me that the very next day after I got drafted. When I came down here, he kind of brought me into the room, asked me how I felt about it, and I feel great about it. I feel like it's going to help me maximize my opportunity, maximize my skill set. So I feel like Coach knows what he's doing. He's doing what's best for the team, and I feel like it's going to work out really well.
That was Travis Etienne over the weekend. I think it's an interesting idea. Etienne increased his receptions every year at Clemson. Each season, he caught more passes. And we know he's athletic coming out of the backfield. He's more of a dual threat running back than, say, Najee Harris, who just went ahead of him in the draft, who's more of a between-the-tackle type of NFL running back. But I like the idea. I think you can continue to work on your pass-catching ability just as another option to running the football, especially when you already have James Robinson in the backfield. And they signed Carlos Hyde in the offseason, which made the drafting of Travis Etienne not only in the first round, where many people believe you don't need to take a running back in the first round, but the fact that it was Jacksonville, even though they had already taken his teammate Trevor Lawrence, many were surprised by that destination, by that being the place that Etienne wound up. And maybe because this is Urban Meyer's plan all along. Remember, he had Percy Harvin at Florida, who was recruited as a wide receiver, and he did play wide receiver, but of course he did a little bit of everything. Right? He ran the football, he would line up in the backfield, he'd be in the slot, he'd be on the outside, he just made plays. He was an incredible talent, and you wanted the ball in his hands any way you can make it happen. Maybe Urban views Travis Etienne in a similar light, that we can run him, we could also line him up in the slot. James Robinson could be our first and second down running back, and in those downs, Etienne could just be another option towards the outside, much like Jerick McKinnon. And McKinnon was different as well. There's no direct correlation to what the Jaguars are trying to do with Travis Etienne. But McKinnon was an option quarterback in college, drafted by the Minnesota Vikings, and they turned him into a running back. But he wasn't a true running back, and so they would use him on first and second downs as a slot receiver, and he had great success there. And teams couldn't match up with him. A lot of times a linebacker would be on him, and what a mismatch that was. And he'd eat teams alive in the center of the field, or especially even in the red zone, they would use him as a pass-catching running back in the slot. And he was very dynamic. He couldn't stay healthy, but it's also why Kyle Shanahan brought him into San Francisco. Not so much to be a between-the-tackles, first- and second-down running back, but because he's just a playmaker. He's good in the open space. We'll find ways to get the ball in his hands. And maybe that's the case with Travis Etienne. You know, it's like for you, maybe your job, when you feel like you've mastered something. And it's hard to say Etienne has mastered running the football at the NFL level when he has not done it yet. But he was drafted as a first-round talent at the running back position for a reason. And that's not to say he doesn't need to work on things to have a good NFL career. But as Urban Meyer said, quote, he's the leading rusher in ACC history. So for him to run inside zone, then he kind of trailed off and he said, we thought of the worst-case scenario, you'd have a running back with the skill set of a wide receiver. And best-case scenario, you have a hybrid player that can do both. I think Urban's original point, which he cut off, but I think he was trying to say, you know, to have him come here in this offseason, just run inside zone and, you know, work on handoffs and running the football, he already knows how to do that. So let's spend some time seeing if we can improve his pass-catching skills and use him in a variety of ways. Much like for you at your job, you may feel like you've mastered something that you do and you want to take on more responsibility. You want to be able to do more for the company. You feel comfortable in the original task they hired you for. And you see that your company could use a little bit of help, so you go to your boss and you say, hey, I could help in this area. You know, let me kind of learn on the fly. Yeah, you have a little bit of experience with that, just like Etienne can catch the football out of the backfield, we know that. But maybe he hasn't had the experience of lining up as an actual wide receiver. just like you haven't had the actual experience of diving into whatever that other task may be. And it's to help you be more well-rounded, better at your job, to be able to do more for your company, similar to Travis Etienne. But with Etienne as a wide receiver, maybe Tim Tebow as a tight end, is Urban Meyer on to something? Or are these just college tricks that won't work in the NFL? Remember, Steve Spurrier once said his famous line when he made the jump to the NFL was, "The NFL's no different than college. The only difference is the cheerleaders are older." As Steve Spurrier found out, there were more differences. You can't play college football at the NFL level. There are differences, little subtleties even, to the different levels of the game. Is Urban Meyer going to find that out? Are these things that you could try to pull off in college, but maybe not the NFL? Or will he show that maybe he is one of the smartest guys in the room? People would say, you don't need to take a running back in the first round anymore. And if you do, maybe you should keep him at running back. But I would say, if you're going to take a running back in the first round, you should hope they're a pass threat as well. You know, the last time the Jaguars took a running back in the first round was Leonard Fournette, and they chose him over Christian McCaffrey, who went four picks later. Leonard Fournette was more of the bruiser between the tackles. Christian McCaffrey, we know, is the dual threat. In fact, Leonard Fournette, did you watch him with the Bucs this past year? He's got frying pan hands. That's why they had to bring in another pass-catching running back this offseason. Right, they just signed Giovanni Bernard in Tampa Bay, because Fournette can't catch, and Brady loves that. If you're going to take a running back in the first round, they have to do more than just run between the tackles, because that's less valuable nowadays. Running backs are not out there every down getting a ton of carries unless you're Derrick Henry. Otherwise, you know, you have to do a little bit more. You have to bring a little more to the table. I like this idea. Why not? Give it a try. See how many ways you can use Travis Etienne so that you can use him at the same time as James Robinson. Robinson can be in the backfield. He can get some of the handoffs and early downs. And Etienne, maybe he's also in the backfield. Maybe he's kind of like an H-back. Maybe you put him in the slot. And he's another weapon for Trevor Lawrence. See how many ways you can use him. See how many ways you can get the ball in his hands. And that's what you should do with your playmakers. Get them the ball as often as you can. By the way, remember the outrage over Tim Tebow's potential signing last week with the Jaguars? We're still waiting for that to officially happen. But meanwhile, the Giants just signed Kelvin Benjamin over the weekend, and doing so to turn him into a tight end. Both are former first-round picks. Both are now in their 30s. Kelvin Benjamin has been out of the league for 3 years, and they're bringing him back to give him a try as a tight end. While the Giants already have Pro Bowl tight ends on the roster, Eric Ebron and Evan Ingram and Kyle Rudolph, both Pro Bowl tight ends. And sure, Kelvin Benjamin was at least already a wide receiver. He wasn't a quarterback. And he hasn't been out of the league for 8 years, just three. But there's a reason why he played for three teams in his final 2 years in the league. He only caught half of the passes thrown his way throughout his career, a very low percentage. He was never a great pass catcher. But the reason why the Giants signed him? They didn't need a tight end. They have two Pro Bowl tight ends already. But it's because their GM, Dave Gettleman, was the one that drafted him in Carolina. And just like life, the NFL is about relationships. And when you want to talk about Tim Tebow stealing someone's job, what about Kelvin Benjamin? He's never played tight end, and they already have two good tight ends on the roster. You can make the same argument there. But for some reason, there's a lot more outrage over Tim Tebow than Kelvin Benjamin. When in reality, both guys are just getting opportunities because it's not what they know, but it's who they know at those organizations. And those organizations are the only ones that would take a chance on those players. And, well, that's exactly what happened. Coming up, we'll catch up with maybe the most interesting man in the football world, Presbyterian's new football coach, Kevin Kelly, who never punts. He always kicks onside kicks. He always goes for two. He's very analytically driven. And we'll talk about it with Kevin when we come back. It's the Morrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
This is the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Try to link up with the new head coach of Presbyterian football, Kevin Kelly, one of the more interesting guys in football these days. Coaches by the numbers, doesn't go for it on fourth downs, kicks a bunch of onsides, always likes to go for it on two-point conversions after touchdowns. So we'll try to link up with Coach Kelly. I know he was finishing up a conference call with other coaches in the conference, so we'll see if he's ready to go here momentarily and talk things out with him. I always say that all musicians have an outlier. And we talked about it last week with Kiss and their song Beth. songs that are just so out of character. And you would say that would be the case with that one for Billy Joel, except the fact that he really did like the whole doo-wop thing throughout the 80s and then just kind of stopped putting out music in the early 90s and had the whole, what was that song, In the Middle of the Night? What's the title of that song? The way he changed, that became Billy Joel the second half of his career. Hey, we were out at the Kiawah Island this morning, out at the Ocean Course, getting ready for the PGA Championship, and we're really excited for that. Coverage will begin Wednesday at noon, when we have 25 hours of coverage between the Mora Midday Show, Fan Talk. We'll have special shows on both Saturday and Sunday. We'll be joined by golf analyst Scott Glaze and Meredith Taylor as well. And we were out there this morning getting things ready to go, scoping out our setup at Fresh Fields Village on Kiawah, and it's fantastic and awesome, and looking forward to being out there on Wednesday. And if you come by and see us, you can't miss us. We'll be at the big tent. We'll have the sign up. You can't miss us in the middle there of Fresh Fields Village. You come by and see us this weekend, you'll have a chance to get a foursome at Stono Ferry, to win a foursome if you come and see us this weekend out at the PGA Championship. So looking forward to that. Additionally, that leads me to this, our 2021 Summer Golf Tour, which currently, this week, has already sold out. It sold out. We went on the road. We head out. We left for Kiawah this morning just after 8:30. And I was told at that point, I was leaving the building, we already sold out. So last week, it was about 17 minutes. This week, it may have been slightly more, but it was less than about 30 minutes that these foursomes sold out. So next Monday, here's your warning again. I'll be warning you all week long. Next Monday, 8 a.m., don't wait around. Dunes West will be the course that will go on sale next Monday at 8 a.m. You can get yourself a foursome for just $98.9. It's a great deal. They go quickly. You got to do it within the first 15 to 30 minutes. Otherwise, you're out of luck. So set the alarm, put it in the reminder, write it down on the calendar. Next Monday, 8 a.m., Dunes West will go on sale for the 2021 Summer Golf Tour. Get yourself a foursome for just $98.90. You can't beat it. It's a great deal. I mean, we've seen that with how quickly these foursomes have been gobbled up. So next Monday at 8 a.m. If you were hoping to get your foursome this week, sorry, too late. You got to do it within the first 30 minutes. That's how popular this thing has become. It's the 2021 Summer Golf Tour. You can find more information online, charlestonsportsradio.com, and that's where you can also go to purchase the actual foursome come Monday morning. All right, we'll try to link up with Coach Kelly at some point. He got tied up with a call for the conference, so we'll try to link up with him. But we got into this a little bit on Friday. You know, the Pac-12 made a change. They hired a new commissioner last week. They announced it on Thursday. And Pat Forty wrote about it over the weekend for Sports Illustrated. And he talked about the new hire for the Pac-12, and he described this move as a boom or bust candidate. The Pac-12 went out of the box again, hired a guy from MGM, not somebody who was working in college athletics, not an AD from somewhere else. Surprised a lot of people. In fact, the announcement from one reporter was that 98% of the people of sports fans will not know who this guy is. And I think that's accurate. Pat Forty also described this Pac-12 job as the toughest in all of football. And I think that's true as well. But as we talk about the Pac-12 and the lack of success and the issues that they face and the uphill climb for the new commissioner taking over, it also got me thinking. You know, did you ever grow up with a sibling who was a problem child? And they were the ones always getting into trouble. Right, they always say it's like the middle child is the trouble one, right? The oldest one, your parents are the strictest on, and they couldn't do anything. The youngest one is the most spoiled, and the middle one feels like almost neglected, and they act out, and they're the problem child, the middle one. And so your parents always had to punish them, and you know, they were always dealing with one of your siblings, your brother, your sister, whoever it was. They were the ones always butting heads with your parents, and your parents always had to punish them, and they were the troublemakers. And so in turn, when you would screw up, maybe it would make you not look so bad as normal. Because they're already dealing with your brother, your sister, and when you would screw up on the scale of screw-ups, it wouldn't phase your parents as bad with what they're dealing with. It wouldn't compare so poorly to what they're dealing with one of your siblings. So you could screw up just as long as it wasn't as bad as what your sibling was doing. Your parents were so distracted with them, maybe they didn't realize how much you were screwing up or what you actually did. Or your parents, maybe they were so distracted sometimes at work. If you go back, if you think back to, say, like the 60s, the 70s, if you're of a certain age when you were being raised, right, your parents, maybe they're both working. Or they just weren't around and they just let you be. And you would come home and you just kind of do your own thing and you could screw up and, you know, you could get in trouble, but your parents weren't around to realize. Or your parents weren't there when, you know, the neighbor caught you doing something and they wanted to go scold you to your parents. And, oh, sorry, they're at work. Right? There's nobody to talk to. And, you know, they didn't have cell phones, so it kind of just disappeared. They forgot to come back later that day and tell their your parents about how you ding-dong ditched them, whatever it was. It's like getting in trouble at work when there is somebody even worse at the company, a bigger troublemaker or somebody who's a bigger screw-up. Just as long as you aren't the worst employee at the company, or just as long as you're not the one causing the biggest problems for your boss, your parent, they're so distracted by someone else's screw-ups, they don't recognize yours. Almost like the idea of if you're in the forest, right, make sure you're with somebody who's slower than you, just in case you come across like a bear. You don't want to be the slowest person in the group. You could be slow as long as you're not the slowest. And that's like the Big 12. They're not the worst conference. They may not be a great conference right now in the college football national title landscape, but they're not the worst. That's the Pac-12. The Pac-12 has a lot of issues. But the Big 12 isn't exempt from this. Right, when it comes to football, the Big 12 really shouldn't be too far behind the conversations of the Pac-12. The big difference is that the Pac-12 has been on the brink of bankruptcy, that people don't care about those games. People care about the Big 12. Financially, the Big 12 is doing just fine. But when it comes to actually competing for national championships, the Big 12 has bigger brands like Oklahoma and Texas, even Mike Gundy at Oklahoma State. Right, even think back to when Mike Leach was in that conference. Right, they have some big brands. They play in Texas. They have passionate fan bases. Pac-12, they play out west. They got a lot of other things going on. People are going to the beach. You know, they have Olympic sports that are really good. They're academic schools. But the Big 12, when you look at that conference, the last time they had a national champion was 2005 with Texas. The last time the Pac-12 had a national champion was a year earlier in 2004. Not a big difference. Additionally, the Pac-12 has had the latest representative in the title game with Oregon. That was more recently than any Big 12 team got there. And the Big 12 is the only of the Power 5 conferences without one team to play in the national championship during the playoff era. So we focus so much on the Pac-12, and rightfully so. And they just hired a new commissioner. So they'll get the headlines and the stories, and we'll talk about, man, this guy's got a really tough job. He's got to turn this thing around. The Pac-12, they're a disaster. Nobody cares about them. They need the playoffs to expand just to get there, yada, yada, yada. All these things can be true. I'm not telling you that the Pac-12 is underrated. I'm not telling you that they don't deserve the criticism they get. We've been tough on Larry Scott in the past and the Pac-12 here on this show. But they are so poor that they distract us from the Big 12, where there should be also be some conversations about the underwhelming performance over the years for the Big 12. Additionally, for the Big 12, the advantage that maybe they had, the big difference that they had, is no longer there. What used to be Big 12 football is now just simply college football. It's just become college football. That's what it is. Everybody's playing Big 12 style. It's wide open football with a lot of throwing and a ton of points and not much defense being played. That's become all of college football. That's how Alabama and LSU just won national titles, and they did so playing that style from the SEC. Dave Aranda, who was formerly the defensive coordinator in the SEC with LSU, is now a head coach in the Big 12, and he was talking about this very thing on a podcast last week, where he was describing, you know, the Big 12, the advantage they used to have, how they were so much more unique than everyone else. That's not really the case anymore. That was the Big 12's advantage. They may not have gotten as good of players as the SEC, but they can make up for it with their offensive prowess. It was like the makeup. It was like the option or the air raid. And Mike Leach ran the air raid in that conference. Hey, we may not have the same talent as them, but we have the plays or some of the playmakers, the speed, the scheme that we can try to keep up with them, you know, in a shootout. That's no longer the case. Now some of the best offenses are there in the SEC, LSU and Alabama, or even Clemson, Ohio State, teams and other conferences that are getting top players and scoring top points as well. Now everybody is on that offensive level. And maybe the advantage that the Big 12 thought they had is no longer an advantage. All the other conferences are playing the same way. Other conferences can bring in more talent, and now they can score as many points as well. So for all the focus we give to the Pac-12, and again, rightfully so, we also need to pay some attention to the Big 12 and see that over the past 15 years, they too have been just about as underwhelming as the Pac-12. The difference is that the Big 12, they do have some teams that compete but can't go all the way, right? They have an Oklahoma that's very interesting and fun to watch, and they're a top five team, and they go to the playoff. We have a Texas who gets all the attention. They're a big brand. They're a top 10 team. They win some good games, but they can't finish it off. They can't win a national championship. They can't compete with the biggest programs in college football. At least they're getting an invite to the dance, whereas the Pac-12 nowadays, right, since Oregon, over the past about 8 years, they won't even get an invite. They won't even get invited to the dance. You don't even think about them. we're still considering the Big 12. It's like, I think Louis C.K. did a bit on this, and they also brought it up in Seinfeld when they were sitting around the table in the diner, and George said, every group of friends, right? They all need that friend. Every group of friends has that one friend that everyone makes fun of, that you all tease. And it's almost like, you keep them around for like moral support in some cases, right? You have that friend with you that always seems to screw things up, and you just realize maybe it makes you feel better about yourself. Like, well, at least we're not that guy. And you always make fun of that kid, whatever it is. Right, that's like the Big 12 in an insecure fashion, always making fun of the Pac-12. The Big 12's hanging out with the SEC and the ACC and the Big 10, and they're the ones that are starting all the jokes. Right, oh, look at his pants. Oh, he looks so goofy. Oh, look at those shoes. What is he wearing? Right, the Big 12's going out of their way to make fun of the Pac-12 with the SEC and the ACC just to keep the attention off of them so that we could continue to poke fun and point and laugh at the Pac-12, not realizing that the Big 12, like, wait a minute, you guys have been very underwhelming as well. Maybe we should be making fun of what you're wearing because you look pretty ridiculous. And the Big 12 is just sitting there trying to direct all the attention over the Pac-12 so that nobody acknowledges how big of a disappointment the Big 12 has been. And with the story about the new commissioner for the Pac-12 and all the talk about that, it just got me thinking. Like, wait a minute. If we stack up the Big 12 when it comes to national titles or trying to compete for a national title, when we stack up the Big 12 to the Pac-12, of late, there hasn't been a huge difference. Coming up, a tough weekend for Major League Baseball, specifically the commissioner. But a good weekend for the Gamecocks as we make a push towards the college baseball playoff and World Series. We'll get to that when we come back and wrap up Hour 1. It's the Mara Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Mara Midday Show.
Me all wrong, baby. My baby's already got all of my love. So no, no, honey, I'm good. I can have another, but I probably should not. I got somebody at home. And if
coming
I
up,
stay,
a big weekend for the Gamecocks on the diamond, but not so much maybe for Major League Baseball, or at least the commissioner's office. It's the Mara Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Wrapping up Hour 1. You ever have a problem around the house and you think, I can't fix that? Don't worry, because the Canty Foundation Specialist can. Check them out online, cantycanfixit.com, or give them a call, 843-484-3625. Because Canty knows how tough it can be to find a contractor that you can trust. They offer warranted solutions and a free, no-obligation estimate for all foundation repair services. They'll repair the crawl space. They'll level your concrete. They'll repair the concrete, right? If you have a sidewalk, a driveway, a pool deck that needs to be repaired, they'll do it for you. If your settlement's sinking, if you got a tilted chimney, the wall needs to be straightened. They do foundation repairs, commercial foundations, waterproof basements, install gutters, put a coating on the garage floor. They're the Canty Foundation Specialist. Online at cantycanfixit.com or give them a call, 843-484-3625, especially this time of year. It's warm out. Maybe you're hanging out by the pool. You're outside. The kids are outside. They're running around with their friends. Maybe they're playing wiffle ball. Right? Oh, back in the day, we used to play wiffle ball in the front yard. Good times. And they're running around barefoot or with flip-flops on. You got to be careful. If you have concrete around your home that's cracked or uneven, such as a sidewalk, a driveway, a patio, a pool deck, the Canty Foundation Specialists offer the repair options you need to help protect the look of your concrete, the value of your home, and the integrity of those little toes. Contact them for a free estimate. The Canty Foundation Specialist, online at cantycanfixit.com. Or one final time, that phone number, call them. It's a direct line, special number just for us. We share it with you, 843-484-3625. And thank us later. They're the Canty Foundation Specialist. They got you covered. It's a good weekend on the diamond for the Gamecocks. But, you know, on Saturday, I went to the gym. Went to go do a little run. I went to watch a little baseball. They got some new treadmills in there with the nice TVs. The old ones used to only get infomercials, so it was pointless. Now the TVs actually work. They get channels. They don't get Fox Sports 1, however, but they get the regular Fox. So I went on the treadmill on Saturday. I went to watch a little baseball. I thought, this is perfect. This will help me go a little bit longer here on the treadmill, get to watch a game. Couldn't find any baseball. Right, growing up, the Saturday game of the week on Fox was always the biggest deal. Now I put on Fox on Saturday. It's the Spring Football League. You want to know why football is king in this country? Because on Saturday, instead of a Major League Baseball game, we're getting spring football. The Major League Baseball game was on FS1. It took a back seat to the Spring League. And unfortunately, this treadmill did not get Fox Sports 1. So I was stuck watching, and I love football, don't get me wrong, but I was stuck watching, I don't know who it was, like the Jousters against the Linemen. Some stupid game on Saturday. The team Linemen. What is that? You're a football team. Are they named after the offensive or defensive linemen? Number one, lame. Number two, who's naming a team after that position group? Number three, the only alternative is that you're naming your team after power line technicians. Who, look, I appreciate. There's nothing worse than losing your power. You appreciate those line workers, those linemen out there. But to name a football team the linemen, can we come up with a better name for this silly spring league? So the fact that Major League Baseball got bumped by their TV partner, and they said, yeah, you know what, we're going to put the spring league on over, I think it was the A's and Twins. I don't know what the game was. But that used to be a big deal, baseball, Major League Baseball on Saturday afternoon on Fox. And I could hear the music now, and Joe Buck, he doesn't even do half these games anymore. Now we got spring league football on instead. I thought that was bad for Major League Baseball. They're getting passed by the Spring League. That's how much we love football in this country now. That's how much baseball has fallen off. But that was an awe for Rob Manfred, because Nick Castellanos hit a home run for the Cincinnati Reds over the weekend. And he gave a fan a fist bump after the home run on his way to the dugout. And the Reds broadcast noticed that. And they thought, oh, that's interesting. So in the postgame show, they interviewed Nick Castellanos about this home run. And they asked him about that interaction. And it just so happened the fan was still there next to the dugout hanging around. So Nick Castellanos handed the fan the headset. And here's what the fan had to say on the postgame show on Cincinnati Reds TV about what he told Nick prior to hitting that home run.
So I told Nick when he got up there that he should imagine that Rob Manfred's face was on the baseball. And the next pitch, he lit it up over the fence, baby. Alrighty. End it right there.
Now that's somebody filming it off their TV, so that's them laughing in the background, and that's why the quality isn't great. But I love the reaction from the broadcaster in the studio, who doesn't know where to go with that, because the fan just said that he told Castellanos that he should picture the commissioner's face as the baseball, and he hammered it over the fence for a home run. And, of course, for the guy in the studio, for that broadcast network who's partnered with Major League Baseball, you have to be careful what you say, because otherwise, suddenly Rob Manfred will be very upset with you as well. But Manfred, not the most popular guy in Major League Baseball. So as he's sitting in his commissioner's office on New York, and he wants to see, hey, what's going on in our national game this week? He turns on Fox Sports to see the linemen against the Sea Lions. Some crappy spring league game. And then he sees, what's going on in the NL? Oh, Cincinnati Reds, what happened there? Oh, Nick Castellanos and a fan mocking me on TV, using my face as the target for the home run ball. Tough day. Meanwhile, the Gamecocks swept Kentucky, their first series win at Kentucky in 12 years. And a big push to get themselves a top 16 seed and to host a regional in the college baseball playoff. But it's still a big series upcoming against Tennessee, right, this weekend? They still need to win some more games. Hour 2 coming up next. My night with the Charleston Battery, plus, when should rookie quarterbacks make their debuts this year in the NFL? It's the Mara Midday Show, right here on ESPN Radio.